You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
After nearly 10 days away from Indiana, the Pacers return to Banker Life on Monday in a game that also featured Paul George's return to Indianapolis for the third time since trade 2017, and George managed to steal the night with 36 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. He was followed by Montrezl Harrell's 26 points and 8 rebounds for the Clippers. And for the Pacers, Malcolm Brogdon led the team in scoring with 20 points, and Domantas Sabonis put up a double-double with 18 points and a monster 22 rebounds. But none of that was enough to overcome the shooting woes and being out-rebounded as the Pacers lost the Clippers 110-99. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this wonderful show. On today's podcast, I'll bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers' loss to the Clippers. And then I'll bring a segment about strength of schedule, which, shocker to all of you out there, has not been good for the Pacers and what that means going forward. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. It's that time of year when everyone is traveling or running around or getting through those thoughtful gifts to people they care about. Think about giving yourself the gift of an Audible membership. And now is the best time to do it with a special offer of 53% off your first 3 months. Access an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivations, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. You can choose 3 titles every month, 1 audiobook, and 2 exclusive Audible originals you can't hear anywhere else. Listen on any device, anytime, anywhere with the Audible app. It's great while commuting, at the gym, or during your holiday travels. With Audible, you'll enjoy an easy audiobook exchange in your own audiobook library you keep forever, even if you cancel. And right now, for a limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Give yourself the gift of listening. For more, go to audible.com/lockedonNBA. That's audible.com/lockedonNBA. The good and the bad and the ugly from the Pacers lost to LA Clippers. A lot more bad and ugly than good, actually. Not surprising since the Pacers lost by 11 points. But let's start positive before we get into some of the negative of the Pacers game. So, the first good is Domantas Sabonis. Another solid night for the Eastern European center. 18 points and 22 rebounds and 4 assists. The only positive player, plus minus, on the starting lineup. Now, plus minus doesn't mean much usually anyways overall, but for a single game, it has some value. But he was awesome tonight. He was probably the only bright spot for the Pacers. I got two more, I guess, kind of bright spots, but overall his entire night was probably the only bright spot for the Pacers. He was basically the second highest field goal percentage on the team for the night. I think third highest actually behind McDermott and Brogdon. He just continues to be awesome with the bench unit. You know, when they stagger him, he continues to play really well. He was a huge part of the Pacers cutting the leads multiple times on this Clippers team, or maintaining a lead, I guess, in that kind of second quarter, kind of hanging around the Clippers at least. And he just made a case that, you know, when he's playing center, he's at his best. So another good night for him, and it kind of leads me to my bad, and that was Miles Turner just had a bad night again. Turner is in kind of a rough kind of stretch for his career right now. So if you kind of take his last, let's say, 5 games, so he was situationally not terrible in the past couple of games, but really, since that Philly game where he put up just 3 points, he had a good game against Memphis where he had 17 points, but again, failed to shoot higher than 45% in the field, 5-11, and 1 of 5 from 3. So not a fantastic night. Moore got to the line, was able to get points that way. An okay game against Oklahoma City, certainly. They kind of really, I mean, they didn't blow the team out, but they maintained and controlled most of that game. He had a very okay game against them, not against Detroit. A very good end to the Knicks game, but still a pretty bad 3 of 8 from the field and 1 of 4 from 3. I mean, really for the last 5 games, he's been now going on 6 to go to the Clippers game. Just not a great 3-point shooter, which has hurt him because that's what's kind of the one thing that was kind of his saving grace. He was 1 of 4 from 3 tonight. Yeah, and his defense was pretty much neutered by the Paul George Montrezl Harrell combination of just like, as soon as he flooded George, he kicked it out to somebody, or Harrell was cutting the rim, or anytime Turner left his man, either it was Zubac or Harrell, Lou Williams or Pat Bailey would find him immediately and beat Turner on that. So not a great game for Turner overall, but you know, he's in a little of a slump. We'll see if he can get out of it eventually. Switching back to another good real fast, Malcolm Brogdon had another solid night, and mainly the guy played with 4 fingers. He dislocated, I think, his pinky over one of his finger. I think it was pinky finger over Friday night to Saturday night in the Friday game against Detroit. And he scored 20 points, returned after didn't play Saturday, 7-15, 2-6-3. I wouldn't say he was like fantastic, but it was good for him to be able to play through that. It'll probably be a thing that will be nagging him for most of the year. Frankly, usually hand injuries, those kind of like minor ones, just kind of stay around, and most players just get kind of splinted or whatnot. So we'll see how he plays the next few games, but it was good to see that it really didn't affect him. I mean, I think he was probably not at his best, let's say. I mean, 7-15 is a you know, below his 50% shooting night that he's been averaging on the year almost, but considering the opponent and how they guarded him, I thought he had a good game. He was in the good. And last good I kind of had with Doug McDermott, who 17 points, continues just like his world-beating three-point shooting. He was, I believe, 5 of 8, which gets you like a 60-something percent from three. You look at McDermott's stats right now. So coming into the game, he was shooting 45% from three on almost four attempts. We took eight attempts tonight and made five of them. That will boost that percentage and those attempts per game. I mean, that is by far career highs, like, I mean, by a mile form in terms of shot attempts from three, in terms of makes from three. I mean, he is on pace to certainly have probably his career season. You would think he was in a contract year, how good he's playing. Luckily, he's got him locked in for one more year at least, but the way he's shooting, the way he's playing, he's heading towards a multi, you know, a 10-figure contract, I guess, eight-figure per year contract. Right now, he makes about seven, which is about seven figures. But he's, yeah, the way he's been playing of late has been just awesome, and they're just finding ways to get the ball, and he just continues to be really the kind of, you know, he's not the best player on the bench, but what he does for the bench and everything is just incredible. So I continue to be happy with him, and if you aren't noticing the leap he's taking this year, then you really don't watch the pitchers the past 2 years. All right, so let's get to some of the bad and the ugly. We don't do it super fast, but just kind of burn through some of them real quick. So the first bad, well, I already did a monster bad. The second bad, sorry, would be T.J. Warren. I thought he had a really, really just awful night. He got to the line, had some rebounds. He continues to really not pass the ball, shocker. But 2 of 8, really could not seem to get, you know, I think he was guarded by Paul George a little bit and maybe some combination of Patrick Beverley and other guys off the bench, but he just could not figure out how to get anything going. You know, his signature kind of one-on-one matchups where he scores on kind of a floater or off the glass shot just weren't going. He just had one of those bad nights. You know, it's not completely unexpected from a guy like him. You know, we always hear he's up and down, and he's been really up for the better part of, you know, he scored 24 or more points the past three games, so he's really been up. And really, he's pretty much going on probably a week now. So really, since the Orlando game, like two Saturdays ago. I mean, I guess he had an okay game against Memphis and an okay game against Atlanta where he only, you know, 16 and 14. But his last, like, I would say truly miserable game like it was tonight was Orlando basically 2 weeks ago or 16 days, give or take. So we'll see if this is a thing that holds. Will he be, you know, bad against Boston? And is it going to be a thing against good teams? Although he played very well against Philadelphia, he had 29 points. So I don't think it's necessarily a good versus bad team kind of thing. But he was not very good tonight. You got to say when a guy isn't good. Hopefully he'll be better against Boston on Wednesday, because they do need him. I mean, when he's, you know, if he's 20-plus points, that means the team is probably in the game. They might not win it, but they're in the game because his scoring just adds a dimension to their offense they don't really have. So some of the really ugliness. I think the first one is the Pacers just overall shooting. So they were 34 of 96, which high-paced game, that's 35% from the field overall. That's just bad. I mean, they had basically a 19-point first quarter. They couldn't score more than 30 in any quarters. They had, so it goes 19, 29, 25, and 26. They could not get it going at all. It felt like all night it was a struggle just to get, you know, three or four bucks going at the same time, except for those runs where they were down by so many points that they kind of were able to get some, I guess, easier shots per se. They were not that good from three. They took 35 three-point attempts, which is pretty high for this team, but they only made 10 of them. They got to line a decent amount, but those kind of 28% from three and 35 from the field, you're going to lose most of those games. And the fact that they were in this game is more a testament to the fact that Clippers only really shot 40% and 31% from three, which was just enough to basically beat them. The last kind of ugly was the points in the paint. That's where the Clippers kind of destroyed this team. Between Montrezl Harrell just basically in, I don't know, becoming an 8 foot away from the rim kind of monster. And Zubac cleaning up a couple shots here or there. They had 56 points in the paint compared to the Pacers, I think 36. That's 20 points being outscored. Now, the Pacers only really play one player in the paint. That's Sabonis. But to be outscored by that much is more a testament to the defensive end of the Pacers, where usually the Pacers are not the worst points in the paint. Defense, kind of a Turner and stuff like that, they're usually able to be okay. But yeah, it was a bad night in the post for the Pacers, and they got creamed. And I mean, I think if we're talking about good for the Clippers, really all it was Harrell and George. I mean, George took 26 shots, made 10 of them at 36 points. I mean, he wasn't like, you know, shooting his lights out, but he was just getting a lot of clean looks and eventually converted enough of them. You know, 7 of 16 from 3, that's going to kill you most nights. I mean, that's that right there. No matter how he shoots overall, 7 3-point shots will kill you. And Harrell shooting above 50% will kill you every night. And Harrell, is just impressive. I mean, he's due for a huge payday. He would look really good in a Pacer uniform next to Sabonis. But alas, that's probably never going to happen. All right, so the Pacers lost. Let's move on from that. Let's be honest, we can all admit that sucked. But, you know, let's get ready for Boston on Wednesday. Tony will have that podcast, but first, let's take a quick break, and I will then do a segment on strength and schedule. Now to continue this sort of depressing podcast, but the Pacers' strength of schedule should be concerning to all. So at 15-9, the Pacers have played the easiest schedule in the NBA. That is according to a ESPN ranks, basically teams they play, win percentage. Now, that right now does not include the Clippers game, which should help boost them. The Clippers are now 18-7 and I think have like the third or fourth best record in the West. So they play, basically the teams they played have an average win percentage of 45%. It might go up. The nearest team is Chicago at 46%. So maybe, honestly, part of this is probably a in their division thing and who they played, right? So just running off the Pacers schedule real fast. So they played Detroit 3 times. In Detroit is 10-14, so not terrible, but they played Detroit 4 times now, and they lost 3 of those. So that's 3 of their 9 losses, right? Their other losses are to Charlotte, who is also not very good. Charlotte is, well, they're okay again, 9-16. They're not as bad as we all thought they'd be. Houston and Milwaukee, 2 teams who are very good. Milwaukee's 21-3, and Houston 15-8. The other loss to Philadelphia, who's also pretty decent. I think Philadelphia is, real quick, 17-7. So they're pretty good. And then the Clippers today, who are now 18-7. So they certainly have none of their losses besides, I mean, the Detroit ones are, I mean, they lost to Cleveland. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. They lost to Cleveland, who's miserable. So they already have some bad losses. I mean, I think at least Cleveland and Charlotte can be considered bad losses. And then if you want to sprinkle in and say that maybe losing to Detroit 3 times versus like 1 or 2. They probably should go 3-1 against Detroit. It's bad. So they already have 4 bad losses. On top of that, they don't really have any signature wins, right? Utah would probably be their best win. And Utah right now, Utah is 13-10, which actually the same record as the Nets, who they beat twice already. Those are kind of their 3 signature wins. They certainly have played well against Philadelphia. That's a signature loss, per se. They should have won that one. But they really haven't beat anybody any good. I mean, they've beat Memphis, who is the 3rd worst team in the West. They beat Atlanta, 3rd worst team in the East. They beat New York, the worst team in the league. Washington, one of the 5 worst teams in the league. They beat the Grizzlies, I think, twice now. Also one of the 2 worst teams, you know, one of the 5 worst teams in the league. I mean, they have not beat anybody good or played anybody good, but, I mean, they've beat enough of them, right? I mean, I think certainly it'd be better if they were 24-5 right now. You feel more confident, but they beat enough of them where even though, so the schedule coming up, that's where it kind of flips, right? So coming up, they play a much harder schedule. So over the next, you know, what's called end of the month, they play Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, Miami, Philadelphia. So those are 6, including tonight's game against the Clippers. That's basically 7 playoff teams. And sprinkled in there is only like, and the Lakers, so it's 8 playoff teams. And sprinkled in there is only like 3 non-playoff teams, right? There's Atlanta, Charlotte, Sacramento, and New Orleans, so 4. So they basically will have played 8 playoff teams and 4 non-playoff teams. Let's say they go 4-8 in that stretch, right? So that puts them at a record of about 19-17, which isn't fantastic, but is probably where we want them to be right now. But so going forward, their training schedule is pretty tough. I mean, that's not obvious, right? If you're playing the easy schedule, I mean, they play the 2nd toughest schedule in the league going forward. They put Milwaukee three times, Lakers twice. That's their best opponents. They play the toughest schedule in the league right now going forward is the Golden State Warriors because they can't play themselves. That's basically that reason. But I would say if you're a Pacer fan right now, this next 3 weeks is do or die or make or break, right? So if the team goes, let's say they go 4-8 or even worse, 3-9 in this next month, I think then there's a discussion about, okay, this team isn't quite on those team level. Now, you can make any excuse without Vic. They're just not as good. But I think a lot also depends how they lose, right? So to lose to a Clippers team tonight without Kawhi, but really it got close a little bit, 7 points, I think, towards the end of the game, but was not very close to most of the game I think this game definitely showed the Clippers are on another level than the Pacers, right? Just Harrell and the bench and like just the roster that was around George fit him really well, and he played fantastic, and they just don't have a player like that right now. So I think that's what we'll learn over the next kind of month is if the Pacers, so let's say they go 4-8, right? But they lose by, you know, a handful of points to the Lakers and Boston and Miami and Philadelphia, right? They lose by, let's say, like less than 5 points each of those teams. I think then you make a case, okay, this team might be up there. But if they're getting blown out tonight by Boston's, by the Lakers, by Milwaukee, by Toronto, all those teams, then there should be some concern about this Pacers team because then there's a real concern this team just is not on that level. And I don't know how to make this team, right? So on one hand, they have a 4.7 win, plus 4.7 point differential, which is like, I think it's okay, so it's right now it's sixth in the East, but it's, you know, it's one of the only six that have a plus point differential in the entire Eastern Conference. In the league, it's basically, I think it ranks 11th, which is solid. So I don't know what to make of that. You know, does that mean they're a good team or not? I don't know. I mean, it's who they beat, right? It's nobody. So that kind of confusing there. But on the other hand, right, like I said, they haven't beat anybody good. If Utah and Brooklyn are signature wins, those are two teams that are the 6 and 7 each conference. Those aren't really signature wins. Those are you're beating teams on your tier, right? So like I think there's a question is like, does the tier stop at 10 in the NBA, right? You take the top five in the East, especially from Milwaukee, Boston, Miami, Philadelphia, Toronto, then both LA's, Dallas, Denver, Houston. Is that a tier of teams? And the Pacers are the best of that next tier. That might very well be, and that's what we'll learn, I think, over the next kind of 3 weeks, let's say, is what tier the Pacers are in. Because if they go 7-5 in this game, they're able to upset they're able to beat a Toronto and a Miami. Just probably two of the 8 teams. They go 500, that's probably fine. Then all of a sudden, we're looking at a team that we're thinking, oh, well, maybe they are on level. Because, you know, in my opinion, the East is Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and then Boston, Miami, Toronto are kind of this second tier, and the Pacers are in that third tier of the Pacers, Nets, Magic kind of tier. That's how it's kind of broken up in my mind. But the Pacers, I think, could be on the Heat, Raptors, Celtics level. I don't think there's any reason they shouldn't be. Now, maybe right now with the injuries, maybe not. Millie's just a big injury now. Maybe not. But it feels like if they get a better performance from, Miles Turner and the combination of just the way Sabonis has been playing and Brogdon hopefully continues to put up kind of his streak, they should be on those three teams level right now, and then the Vic thing should take them from that tier to the next tier. That's kind of the ideal, right? The Vic takes them into, like, could they beat Philadelphia? Could they compete with Milwaukee? But right now, I think they're sort of two tiers down those teams. So we'll see what happens. If I'm a Pacer fan, I'm watching this very cautiously, at least. I'm thinking, I'm hopeful, certainly. Always going to be positive that they can at least beat maybe Boston at home. I think they get Miami at home as well. That would be, they get Toronto at home and Philadelphia at home. You know, if they could win those three home games, that would be ideal. You know, if you go to Miami and lose, you lose on the road, not a big deal. You go to Milwaukee and lose, you lose Milwaukee, not a big deal. And they beat all the bad teams. They're able to beat Atlanta, they're able to beat Charlotte, they beat Sacramento, and able to beat New Orleans. Those are four wins they should just get. I mean, they should win those games. They lose those games and they lose the other, eight games against good teams, then I would be very concerned. I mean, if they go like 2-10 this next stretch, then we're talking about a team where we're not, all of a sudden there, I think they'll be 17-19. They'll be sitting probably borderline playoffs at that point. So it's an interesting stretch. I don't think Vic will return this stretch. We'll see. I think Vic's target's probably January at some point. So, but that's kind of this. We'll see what this team is at this next 3 weeks between now and New Year's. So I know that wasn't super positive or super happy, but I think this is an important thing to hear because the Pacers, this is kind of the make or break stretch for this Pacer team. And you know what? We'll be there for you guys. As always, Locked On Pacers podcast is 5 days a week. So Tony will bring you a preview of tomorrow's Boston game. I'll bring you the recap on Thursday. And then Tony will bring you a preview of the entire weekend when the Pacers take on the Hawks and the Hornets. And we'll be back again next Monday for our weekly show, of course. Check out our weekly show on Monday if you missed it already. We talked about all four games, preview last week, talked about the Miles Turner stuff, talked about Sabonis, and talked about Brogdon's injury and whatnot. Check out that podcast and give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, me at FreedomAdam5, and my co-host Tony's at TEASTNBA. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast, and we will see you guys again tomorrow.